If an orchard, small or large, is a dream of yours, knowing how to graft fruit trees could be a valuable skill. Today, we'll find out how it works. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and although there's snow on the ground, a sure sign of spring, Horticulture Day is back on every week. Today, Patrick O'Malley, Iowa State University Extension Field Specialist, will be here. We'll talk about grafting fruit trees, and he can handle all of your fruit tree-related questions. Horticulturist Richard Giron will be here as well to answer your questions as you plan your garden and landscaping changes. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and now that it's March, Horticulture Day returns to being on weekly. In spite of the snow, spring is definitely coming, and it won't be long before fruit trees are blooming. If you have a few fruit trees or an orchard or dream of having one, knowing how to graft fruit trees can be a very valuable skill. And it's a skill that Patrick O'Malley, Iowa State University Extension Field Specialist, shares with many people. In fact, he's holding fruit tree grafting workshops in Altoona, Bettendorf, and Mount Pleasant coming up this spring. Hello, Patrick.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you.
When we talk about grafting a fruit tree, most of the fruit trees that we buy from a nursery or a supplier, most of those trees have been grafted, right?
Right. Whether it's fruit trees, and most of the ornamental trees have been grafted as well.
Why is that?
You get a lot of benefits from having a scion or the name variety, say like a Red Delicious or a Honeycrisp, onto a rootstock. You can get dwarfing. You can get trees that are more precocious, meaning that they'll produce fruit faster in less number of years. You can get disease resistance. You can get basically a plant that really fits your needs.
And also with a lot of fruit trees, and let's talk particularly about apple trees, that's a way to know what kind of fruit you're going to get from the tree, because when apples get pollinated, those seeds might lead to a completely different kind of apple, right?
Yeah, right. If you grow an apple from a seed, the apples outcross, and so you've got a separate flower from a male tree from another apple tree where the pollen goes to the female tree, and so you've got a cross pollination, and so there's going to be a mixture of genes in those seeds, and so you're not going to get the same plant that you plant from seed if you do that with apple. Now, however, if you do peach, sometimes a peach tree will come fairly true to seed. Not always, but it'll come fairly close. But with apples, you'll definitely get something different.
Okay. So with apples, pretty much all of the trees that you would purchase at a nursery would have been grafted onto rootstock. Is that accurate?
Well, you can never say always. probably about 99.9%. On rare occasions, you'll see seedling apple trees, but yeah, they're almost always grafted.
All right. Are there kinds of fruits that are not grafted?
Generally, most of them are grafted. Again, sometimes the peaches may not be, but usually you get a better situation with a grafted fruit tree. They seem to survive better in the soil. They can handle maybe a little moister soil than they could with a regular rootstock.
Okay. And I can imagine if you have an older apple tree in your yard, I can imagine someone saying, I would like to have a younger version of this apple tree. And in that case, the best way to propagate would, again, be by grafting, right?
Yeah, by doing a form of grafting, you can preserve that scion wood. Again, you know, say it was a Honeycrisp tree, you can reproduce that, and it should have the same qualities of apple that you had previously.
Okay, and you've been using the word scion. What does that mean exactly?
Well, there's two very complicated terms that we use in grafting. One is scion, or the upper part of the wood. Again, like the name variety, whether it's a Bartlett pear, whether it's a Red Delicious apple. That's the scion wood. That's the part that you get the fruit off of. And then the other technical term is rootstock, which is the bottom part of the plant.
All right. And when you're selecting a rootstock, what are you looking for?
Well, again, you're looking for disease resistance, ability to tolerate the wetter soils. A lot of times the rootstocks are used because they can size retain the trees and make them smaller. There's a guy over in the Chicago area that has just a typical residential size lawn, and he's got a extreme dwarfing rootstock called P22, and he's got over 200 trees in his backyard.
So you can keep the trees small, which means that you can plant more of them in a smaller area, but it also means that it's a lot easier to pick the fruit, right?
Right. As we all get older, sometimes we start to have an aversion towards ladders.
Yeah, that's understandable. All right. And when you're selecting the scion, the upper part, what makes a good part of a tree to graft onto rootstock? What is going to meet with the most success?
Well, basically, you can use any variety cultivar would be the proper term here. But it's usually one that is a good tasting apple, like, for instance, Honeycrisp. Or like you mentioned earlier, it could be a tree that has some sort of historical significance. Maybe your grandfather originally planted it and it's just kind of a unique apple. You may not even know what cultivar it is, but yet you want to preserve that. It's just, as long as there's some value to that scion wood, it's either perceived or real, it's something good to graft.
All right. So is there, when you're selecting, if you're going out to an apple tree in your yard and you're selecting that material to graft onto the rootstock, what are you looking for? What qualities are you looking for before you make a cut?
Okay. Excellent question. And a lot of people make a mistake in that area. Is ideally, you're looking for one-year-old wood. One-year-old wood arose from a bud that started growing last year. Ideally, the wood is at minimum the thickness of a pencil. In a normal year, the scion wood, this one-year-old wood, you'll usually find more towards the top of the tree. We look for pieces that are somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 18 inches long is good. Again, all one-year-old wood originated new growth from a bud last year. That would be the ideal growth. Unfortunately, because of the drought last year, sometimes the trees didn't grow quite as vigorously as they would normally, and so you may have to get smaller pieces of budwood this year.
Okay. And how do you take it off the tree so that you'll have the kind of cut that you want?
Well, for the budwood, we're collecting it for the purpose of grafting. We're going to do finer cuts later on. So essentially, we cut it somewhere below where it arose the previous year. So we're cutting into the two-year-old wood just to harvest it. And then what we need to do is now is actually the time to get the budwood. Now into maybe early March is the best time. Well, I guess we are in early March.
Suddenly, yes.
Yeah, so that kind of popped up on us. So basically now till even the first, second week of March is still a good time to get the budwood. We collect that, and then we wrap it in sphagnum peat moss or burlap or newspaper, moistened newspaper, and keep it cool. You can put it on the north side of the house and cover it with some mulch. You can put it in a refrigerator, but keep it moist and cool. And then usually we do the grafting, the whip and tongue grafting that we're going to talk about in late March, early April.
Okay. And now let's talk about the different techniques. Once you've got your rootstock and you've got your scion wood, how do you bring it together?
By grafting.
Explain the process to me, please.
Okay, so you take your piece of scion wood, and like I mentioned earlier, you take approximately 18-inch long piece. It's the middle part of that 18 inches that would be the prime part to use for grafting, not the tip, not the base. So we use the middle part. We usually take a section approximately 6 inches long, 4 to 6 inches long. We cut that. We do a nice slanting cut on the bottom of that. And then we cut in back into the wood on the bottom there to form what we call a tongue, kind of a back cut. We do identical cuts on the rootstock, with the exception being that we're doing it on the top of the rootstock. So we do a nice long slanting cut, and then we do a cut back into that wood, and we've formed like what's called a tongue. It's called a whip and tongue graft. And because we've done that cut back, we can insert those two pieces into each other, and they'll actually kind of stay together just by that insertion. But we like to have a better union in that. So we take what I call plastic tie tape. It's a stretch plastic tape, and we wrap it around the graft area, and it kind of stretches, and you pull it tight, and you wrap it all the way from the rootstock up to the scion. So about maybe a 2 to 3 inch area from the rootstock to the scion, that intersection where we've joined them together. And then we seal it off with some grafting wax or even a pruning paint to kind of stop air from getting into it. And we've got a nice solid seal there. And then if things go right, about a month later, a callus will form. The union will start to grow together. And then after about 6 weeks, you can take the tape off, check the progress, see if it is coming together. And if it is, then rewrap the tape lightly, not as tight as you did previously. And then after a few more weeks, you can take it off and you can You can have them potted up. You can plant them outside. You can, you've got your new tree.
And during that time when you're waiting for the rootstock and the scion to really join and become strong, how are you keeping the rootstock healthy and keeping the plant alive?
Well, the best way I like to do it is actually pot up the rootstock into a pot, usually like a 6-inch pot. And then I keep it in an area of moderate temperature, somewhere between about 50 and 70 degrees, and with no direct sunlight, and just let it sit there. And that's the process. Sometimes we call this whip and tongue grafting. Sometimes we also refer to it as bench grafting, or where you just kind of leave it on a bench and hope something good happens. But you let it go like that, and over time it will slowly, if you've done everything right, you've matched the cambium layers, the graft will start to grow together. It'll form callus tissue and sort of seal up that union between the two plants. So it does take 4 or 6 weeks. You can actually tell if you're successful too is, again, after 4 to 6 weeks or so, you'll start to see the top, the scion, will start to leaf out. Well, keep in mind, the rootstock and the scion wood were both dormant when we started. And so as we progress through the season, you know, so now maybe we're in mid-May, we should start to see the shoots, the buds start to pop on the scion wood.
All right. And, okay, you can pot that up. You can plant it. How long between this process, between grafting a tree and actually having fruit?
Well, we go full circle and go back to the rootstock. If you've got a real dwarfing rootstock like a Bud 9 or a P22, you're looking 2, maybe 3 years, and you're going to get your first fruit. If you're using a rootstock like EMLA 7, it's going to be a bigger tree. At maturity, it's going to be about 15 feet and a tree 12 to 15 feet. And a tree like that can take 4 or 5 years to fruit. Sometimes it's take as many as 7 or 8.
In those early years, if you get blossoms, should you take them off so it's not putting too much strain on the tree to try to produce fruit if it's not ready?
If you got blossoms in the first year or two, I would take them off. But after that, I would be really happy.
Just be thrilled. All right. And obviously, this is a very complicated process, and it sounds like something that would be very beneficial to see. So you do have some grafting workshops coming up this spring. And I mentioned in Altoona, Bettendorf, and Mount Pleasant. The deadline for signing up for those is coming up in the near future. But you said people could get in touch with you directly if they're interested.
Yeah, if they're interested in one of the fruit tree grafting workshops, they could just contact me by email, OMALL, the at symbol, IASTATE.edu.
Okay.
Stands for iowastate.edu.
All right. And you can also go to our Facebook page and you can find a link to one of those workshops. They're on the Iowa State University Extension calendar. So you can find all of them and all the information that you need. You can also give us a call, 866-780-9100. Join us with your questions. Richard Giron will be here in a moment. So if you're planning fruit trees, if you're planning a garden, if you're planning landscaping changes, we're here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today. I'm Charity Nebbe. And joining us now, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. And it's wonderful to have you on weekly again. I'm very excited about that. And Patrick O'Malley is also here with us today, Iowa State University Extension field specialist. We've been talking about grafting fruit trees, and Patrick can handle all of your fruit tree questions. We had him on last spring to talk about pawpaws. So if you are thinking about planting fruit trees, if you have fruit trees that are having a little trouble, feel free to call with your questions. And of course, Richard can handle everything else. I promise.
I'll try.
866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And first up, we've got Matthew on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Matthew.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
The question is about a potential planting of a fruit tree in our front yard. But driveway put in, and now we have about 10 by 10 area between the driveway and our walk towards our steps that we'd love to put a tree there. Of course, from what I understand, it need to be probably a dwarf varietal, and also we need to, since we probably wouldn't put two trees, we need to be able to be happy and hopefully produce fruit on its own. So I guess that's the question. Anything that would work with our climate, of course, and that would have a chance of being fruitful.
How big of an area were you talking about?
I'm sorry, Iowa City.
Oh, but how large is the yard again?
Oh, the area. I think it's about 10, I haven't just measured it, but it would probably be a 10-foot by 10-foot spot.
Okay. It would be a little tight, but you could easily squeeze in two dwarf apple trees. You would want to get one of the more dwarfing ones. There's a Bud 9 rootstock that would work pretty good. Probably two of those could be put in that area. But you do want to, do get the two different cultivars so you get the better cross-pollination. Does it have good light exposure?
Yes. I mean, it faces, it's in the corner lot, so there's not much shade. It does, I guess it faces north and east. That's probably the main light that it gets.
Okay, obviously small area.
It would get some south, too. I mean, I think there'd be plenty of light. I mean, it'd be 30 feet away from where we had some pretty successful tomatoes last season, so I think it gets sun.
Okay, that's a good indication if tomatoes did okay there, because, yeah, fruit trees really do better in full sun. It not only makes them for a more flavorful fruit, but it also lessens some of your disease problems.
All right, and you're saying that it would be best to put two in because you're really taking your chances with fruit production if you don't have something to cross-pollinate.
Right. Every type of fruit's different, but generally apples will do better if you've got two trees. If you really want to try to go with one, maybe something like a Golden Delicious has a little bit of self-pollination, and you might be able to get by with one with a Golden Delicious, but generally you need two for apples and pears.
All right. And Matthew, were you thinking about an apple tree, or was there a different kind of fruit tree that you were interested in?
I'm open. I think, we're open. I think one of the other parameter would be that it's not too, I guess, that there's not too much potential mess if we don't, take, I guess, like some berries, for instance, might drop, and if you don't take care of them in a timely manner, you might get, some staining and things like that. So we're trying to make it, not maintenance-free, but, maintenance less, I suppose.
Well, another option is you could go with a peach tree. Just one peach tree is enough to get fruit. We seem to be in a situation where the weather is getting warmer year after year. 20 years ago, we weren't a big fan of peaches in this part of Iowa. You mentioned Iowa City, but now I know I've got peach trees myself, and I've gotten in the Iowa City area peaches like 12 out of the last 15 years. So that might be an option. You just only have to have one tree and you'll get fruit.
All right. Matthew, thank you so much for your call. And let's move on to John in Centerville. Hi, John.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. So I have a couple of Asian pears that are maybe 4 years old. And so the trunk is an inch in diameter. I looked at them a couple of weeks ago, and they have been completely girdled by rabbits, probably. Can I tape up that area with any degree of success, or do I have to start over with those trees?
Well, if the rabbits girdled all the way through the cameum, that's really bad news. But the only thing you can do is there's a specific type of grafting called bridge grafting, where you take wood from higher up in the tree, one of the branches, and you take some of the bark off of that with the cambium attached, and you try to bridge those areas that have been girdled by the rabbit. So if you've got 1 inch diameter, that's a pretty small tree. You could probably try to do like three thin strips, about a quarter inch wide in diameter each. But being such young trees and being girdled like that, you might be better starting off. On the other hand, though, I commend you for growing Asian pear. That's a wonderful, wonderful tree, wonderful fruit, and Centerville should be a great area to grow it.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, John. And we're going to go to John in Waterloo with a very similar problem. Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering about if you had got the dwarf trees, you made the investment in those, if you would be able to protect them from the squirrels, or if there's a way to protect them, the other trees, from the squirrels.
What do you mean by squirrel damage?
And John, you need to turn off your radio. That'll make it easier for you to ask your question.
Second.
What kind of squirrel damage were you talking about? He must have walked away from the phone.
Well,
John, what kind of squirrel damage are you concerned about?
Well, I don't know. I guess the fruit. If you want to get some fruit, I've seen other ones in the past. My father had them, and the squirrels just got everything even before they got ripe.
Squirrels can sometimes be a problem. If you've got any nut trees in the area, they'll prefer the nut trees over the fruit trees. Putting hardware cloth around the base of the tree is always a good idea. That'll help with some of the voles, especially burying the ground a little bit, and some of the rabbits. As far as the squirrels, though, you might have to go with one of the hot pepper type sprays. Might help a little bit.
All right, John, thanks for your call. And now we have a question for Richard. This is from Kathy. We have limited space to plant vegetables so they'll get enough sun throughout the day. Last year, we did a first-time raised garden. I planted tomatoes, peppers, and cucumbers that all did pretty well. If it's true that you shouldn't plant the same type of vegetable in the same place the next year, where can I plant tomatoes, et cetera, and still have a good harvest?
Well, ideally, you want to plant them somewhere else just for disease control. But if you really have no option, you could go back in the same location. Another option would be to plant a tomato in a large container, like a 5-gallon bucket, where you drill some holes in the bottom, and then you could place that maybe on a patio or a porch, whatever, as long as it gets plenty of sun.
Because you can just change the soil from year to year.
Right, right.
Okay. And let's go back to another tree question. This is from Joel, and he said, if you have, for example, a Liberty apple tree that has certain disease resistance properties, would those properties be propagated into other varieties if grafted onto Liberty rootstock?
No.
Okay.
No, the rootstock, the Liberty tree rootstock is going to be something different than the Liberty because it's going to be grafted.
Okay. All right. So, your rootstock, you're not sure what that is if you bought it from a nursery, probably.
Right, but you could take the Liberty Scionwood and graft that onto other rootstock, and you'd have another Liberty tree.
Okay. All right, let's get back to the phones at 866-780-9100. Lori is on the line from Des Moines. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'd like to just ask you, I've had success with apple and pear grafting in my own home yard, and I've really kind of struck out with peach, sweet cherry, and apricot, and I noticed the apricot wood, whether it was maybe not young enough, I don't know, but it seemed real tough, and one particular thing is, can you put a peach on an apricot and vice versa? Please, thank you.
Actually, you can put a peach on an apricot on a peach, vice versa. The stone fruit have a lot of intercompatibility, and so you can do that. When it comes to grafting fruit trees, what we discussed earlier was the whip and tongue graft that we do during the dormant season. There's another major type of graft called the bud graft that we usually do in the mid to late summer that's very successful, especially on the stone fruits like peaches and cherries.
Okay. And we have an email question that kind of is on a same line. He said, do you run the risk of cross-pollination from growing cherries from seed like you do in apples? So would you, if you plant a cherry seed, are you going to have the same kind of fruit on a cherry tree?
Apples are definitely going to be pretty diverse if you plant them from seeds. Cherries, it depends. First of all, whether they're sweet cherries or sour cherries. Sour cherries are self-pollinated, and so sour cherries are more likely to be similar to the parent if you grow them from seed. Sweet cherries, most, though not all, are cross-pollinated, where you've got different parents, and so you're going to have more diversity, especially if they're a cross-pollinated sweet cherry. But they're not going to be identical. But having said that, you know, some of the newer sweet cherry varieties have been developed from seed.
All right. He also says, I've read that you can graft different varieties of one fruit onto one single rootstock. How does that work?
Yeah. Again, with the stone fruit, the cherries, the apricots, the peaches, the nectarines, and plums, they're all part of the genus Prunus. And because of that, they've got that compatibility. So you can graft one upon another. There are certain preferred rootstocks over others. But I know some companies sell what they call the fruit cocktail tree.
Yes. kind of a novelty item, really.
And have you actually seen one, either one of you?
No, but they're fairly common. I would say maybe in some of the lesser known catalogs or less reputable catalogs, it's more of a novelty type item. And usually what tends to happen is that maybe one or two dies out, so you really don't have as many as you thought.
Exactly.
All right. I'm getting the sense that neither one of you would recommend
no.
that.
Yeah. You'll see the same thing with apples and pears, too, where You can't do apple on pear or pear on apple, but on, say, on an apple tree, you might have three or four different varieties grafted on there. And it, in concept, it seems nice, but over time, you usually prune out some of those. You may only end up with one or two.
All right. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. You're welcome to join us with your questions at 866-780-9100. With me, Richard Giron, horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. And Patrick O'Malley is also here today, Iowa State University Extension field specialist. And he specializes in fruit crops. So you're welcome to join with your questions about fruit trees and other crops. 866-780-9100. Ed is on the line next from Stockton. Hi, Ed.
Hello. I have a question for Patrick regarding grafting from a couple of trees on my neighbor's farms. They're both pear trees well in excess of 50 years old that I'm trying to, you know, preserve. But the one tree is clearly on its last legs and isn't really producing enough scion wood in form of new growth to get me a really good, you know, piece to work with. Is the first-year wood thing mandatory, or if I can find some second-year wood, can I get away with this? And then my second question is, what if the diameter on the scion wood and the rootstock don't line up very well? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Well, first of all, you won't get arrested if you use two-year-old wood. But the one-year-old wood will work better in situations like that. And I know a lot of these older trees don't have much growth. I mentioned earlier, you know, an 18-inch long piece is good, and maybe get the center part of it. I've worked with stuff as small as 2 or 3 inches and had some success. But the bigger the piece, the better. I've also done two-year-old wood. The problem with two-year-old wood is sometimes the buds on that piece may actually be flower buds instead of vegetative buds. But, you know, in extreme situations like that, it can be done. As far as the diameters of not matching of the scion wood and the rootstock, that's not a major problem. All we need to do is, as we do the graft and align it, is make sure that at least one side, the cambium, is in contact from the scion to the rootstock. It doesn't have to be all the way around or on both sides. If you've got one side with good solid contact, that will work.
Okay. Let's get back to the phones. And next up is Randy in Iowa County. Hi, Randy.
Hi there. Oh, I really enjoy all the different kinds of pears I pick. I can't tell you how many different kinds I found, old trees and different people's property. So these pileated stink bugs, I heard that they're in Illinois. Once they get here, they're going to be hell on wheels, aren't they, on fruits?
Are you talking maybe the marmorated stink bug?
Right, marmorated.
Well, I got news for you. They're here.
Yeah, we talked with Donald Lewis last spring. They have been found in Iowa, in Davenport.
In Davenport and in Johnson County, and also
if you're one county away, who knows how soon they're going to get to Iowa or Apache County?
Haven't heard of a report there yet, but also we had some from Linn County too. But just very small quantities so far. But I guess the wave is coming. You know, maybe not this year, but
gonna have to spray them. Otherwise, you'll lose your fruit production.
Possibly, we're not real sure. Sometimes they come later in the season, especially in the case of fruit. If you got earlier fruits like peaches or apples that ripen earlier or pears that ripen earlier, they should be less of a problem. The later ripening stuff could be more heavily attacked.
You guys ever going to do a grafting seminar for some of us that would like to have hands-on? I think there was done somewhere in Iowa last year. I realize it's probably too late for that this year.
Well, actually, it's not too late. Patrick has three coming up in the near future.
Right. We've got one coming up in Bettendorf, one in Altoona, and one in Mount Pleasant. And there's also actually a fourth one in Charles City. But the late March, early April is a wonderful time. And the format of these is I go and give a presentation talking about grafting, showing some slides. And then we do the fun part where I demonstrate a whip and tongue graft. And then the participants get to whip and tongue graft their own trees. And they end up doing two of their own and taking two trees home with them.
All right. And if you are interested in more information, you can find a link to one of the workshops on our Facebook page. They are on the Iowa State University Extension events calendar. So if you go to the Iowa State University Extension website, you can find them there. Or you can also just send email directly to Patrick, and his email address is omall@iastate.edu. That's omall@iastate.edu. And if that went by you too fast, our producer in the control room there has the information as well, so you can give us a call at 866-780-9100. And of course, you can also call us with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can call with questions about fruit trees or about your garden that you're planning for the spring, about any landscaping changes you might be planning for the spring as well. And we're going to have to take a short break here. With me, Patrick O'Malley, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Field Specialist, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. Again, you can join us, 866-780-9100. You can also send your email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today. I'm Charity Nebbe, and with me, Patrick O'Malley, Iowa State University Extension Field Specialist, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. And you can join our conversation with your questions, 866-780-9100. We've been talking a lot about fruit trees today. You're welcome to ask questions about fruit trees, but anything else you'd like to grow or grow better, you can give us a call, 866-780-9100. And this is an email from Kate in Fairfield. She says, I have a 15-year-old flowering quince shrub about 6 feet square and 4 feet high. It produces small 2-inch oblong fruits. The branches are a tangle. If I prune them, would I get larger fruits? The fruit is delicious stewed, and I'd like to get more.
Well, it's wonderful that you get a quince like that. I would probably prune it. Probably have some main branches instead of having a tangle of branches. Maybe try to have 3 or 4 really main branches. You could even, if you wanted to, over the period of 2 or 3 years, develop a central leader system on it so it looks sort of like a Christmas tree type shape. But it's not very often you get fruit off the quince here in Iowa, so that's great.
All right, and of course, a little further south, is that the secret, you think?
Well, that could help. There are actually a couple different types of quince. There's a flowering quince that has kind of a pinkish flower that usually doesn't produce fruit as much. And then there's another type that's more the fruit type. Richard, do you have any comments on that?
Well, the flowering quince typically blooms very, very early in the spring. The flowers can be orange, reddish, pinkish. But oftentimes they bloom so early that we have a frost or freeze, and that may damage the flowers so they don't set fruit. The other thing is if we have an extremely cold winter, then it may not even bloom very well. So they tend to be very sporadic as far as bearing fruit.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Debbie is on the line now from Fairfield. Hi, Debbie.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm interested in ballerina apple trees, and I'm wondering if there are special planting issues or getting them established. And I'm also wondering how hardy they are compared to dwarf apple trees.
By the ballerina apple tree, are you referring to a cultivar or the kind of the shape of the tree?
Well, I've seen them in Gurney's catalog, and basically it looks like the trunk goes up and then apples just kind of form off these little bitty kind of twigs coming off of it. I just see a label saying ballerina apple.
Okay, it's one of these forms where it is on an extremely dwarfing rootstock. It's supposed to serve both an ornamental and a fruit purpose. If you want it for the ornamental purpose, I think that's great. You can enjoy it that way. If you want it for fruit, they usually don't do real well in that department.
Okay. Debbie, thank you so much for your call. And next up, Pat is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Pat.
Hi, yes. My question was about plum trees. Is there a recommended variety that you would suggest for the Des Moines area? And also, how close can that be planted to a black walnut tree?
Okay, that's a good question. With plum trees, there's two types of plums. There's the European plums, and then there's the hybrid plums, which are crosses between European and Asian. The European-Asian crossed ones, you need to have two different plum trees to get cross-pollination. But the standard European type, you do not. So probably the easiest one to grow would be a cultivar called Stanley. It's a sort of an Italian prune type, but the Stanley is very hardy to grow. As far as walnut trees, a lot of plants in the Rosaceae family are sensitive to walnuts, and so you may want to try to keep the plum tree, at least out of the drip line of the walnut tree, but keeping in mind that the roots of the walnut can actually extend far beyond the drip line, so you're still at risk, but if you at least keep it out of the drip line, you'll lessen the chances of it affecting the plum tree.
Okay, and what about beech plums? Would that be the same situation as far as the walnut tree?
Correct. Every tree, every cultivar may have a little bit of different sensitivity, but yeah, the further you keep it away from the walnut tree, the better.
All right, Pat, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Larry's in Nevada. Hi, Larry.
Hi. I wondered, where do we get the rootstock? And first of all, and second, I understand there's a way to plant the rootstock so you can actually harvest rootstock from that rootstock in the years ahead of it. Is that right?
Right, yeah. What the nurseries do is they do a method called stooling, where basically they take a piece of the rootstock and plant it in the ground, often horizontally in the ground, and then the buds on the rootstock will form shoots and come up out of the ground, and then also they'll form roots at the lower part of those bud junctions. And over the course of a couple of years, you get these rootstocks, and they break them off the mother plant, and then the nurseries will sell them, or in the case if you did it yourself.
So where could you get them?
Oh, as far as where you get the rootstocks, there's a lot of nurseries that have – whenever it comes to buying fruit trees or rootstock or whatever, I always say the first thing you should do is check your local nursery or garden center, see if they've got it or availability to get it. If they don't, there's mail order catalogs that you can go to. I don't recommend anyone, but one that just comes to mind offhand would be Rain Tree Nursery's got a
– Correct. In Washington, yes.
All right, and that's what you were going to add, Richard?
Yes, that's the one that I would go to because they're kind of hard to find locally. And many nurseries no longer produce them, but Rain Tree has been doing it for a number of years. They have a website, they have a catalog, and they're fairly easy to deal with. So good choice.
All right. This is from Laura. She says, what's the best pH level for growing blueberries, and how can I make the soil more acidic if it's too alkaline?
Well, with blueberries, they prefer a pH around 4.5 to 5, and our pH tends to be around 7. So we typically have to lower the pH. If you're planting just a few plants, the easiest way to do that is when you plant these, they have a very shallow fibrous root system. Dig a wide hole, but a fairly shallow hole, and take half the soil from the hole and mix that with an equal amount of sphagnum peat moss, which you can buy at most garden centers. The peat moss is very, very acidic. So when you mix those to 50-50, you should have the proper pH. Then go ahead and backfill with that mix. And from that point on, what I would typically do is maybe every year apply a little bit of sulfur around the plant. And sulfur tends to lower the pH. So I would do that on an annual basis, or you could also use ammonium sulfate, which does the same thing.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Pam is on the line. Hi, Pam.
Hey, hi. I'm calling about an elderly pear tree, similar to a previous caller. Neighbor has, and I was wondering, are the seeds like more like apple that they probably won't be true to form, or are they more like the stone fruit? And then I probably should add that there's no nearby pears visible, but it has a very abundant harvest of pears even last year in the drought.
Mm-hmm. Is there any chance you know the cultivar name?
No, I don't. I'm sorry. It's old. They said it's been there, similar to the other gentleman, probably 50-some years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apples pears are like apples in that the seeds don't usually come true to type. I mean, you can still try. Usually like one out of every 100 or 2 is a really good one. You know, usually they're not quite.
So your odds are not good.
No, usually the quality is not as good as the parents, but that, they still do a lot of traditional plant breeding where they plant out apple and pear seeds, and with large numbers, they can come up with good new varieties.
Okay. So then my other question is, that since you're doing a workshop in Bettendorf, could I bring a scion to the workshop and graft it onto, if you're bringing rootstock, is that possible?
I'm glad you asked that question, because maybe I didn't clarify. The workshop itself is on grafting fruit trees and the different techniques and so forth on that. The actual demonstration and the ones you bring home will be with apple scions and apple rootstock. So if you brought a pear in, we're not going to have pear rootstock available. So that's, I apologize for that.
But what you could do possibly would be to go to this workshop, learn how to do it on apples, buy maybe some pear rootstocks from the Rain Tree Nursery, and then maybe do this on your own at your place.
Excellent suggestion, Richard.
All right, Pam, thanks a lot for your call. And this is from Beth. I have a dwarf peach tree that was planted late summer 2011. I didn't get any peaches last year because of the late spring frost. During last summer, a thick gelatinous substance began oozing from the tree trunk. Do you know what this is and what needs to be done about it?
Well, when you have wounds on stone fruit, in particular peach, you get that. That's actually sap oozing out, that sticky sap. Now, being the tree's rather young, I'm not sure if it's by the usual cause or not, but a very common ailment of peach trees in particular, and some of the other stone fruit, is the lesser peach tree borer. And that'll come in, and it'll bore the trunk and cause these wounds that will cause the sap to leak out. So you might want to put some sort of a protective material on the trunk. Some people use like a latex paint. There's sprays you can use as well to help protect it. The other problem might be that it might have some sort of winter injury where it cracked, where there was changes of temperature. And there again, that would be beneficial to come in with, say, a interior white latex paint that you mix half paint, half water, and paint the trunks of the tree, especially on the south and west side, with that white colored paint, to help reduce the extremes of temperature from cold to warmer, like on a day when it's in the winter, when it's, say, maybe 10 degrees Fahrenheit outside and the sun's shining, the trunks can warm up quite a bit. And then when the sun goes behind a cloud and the temperature drops, and sometimes you get a splitting of the trunks. And so by painting them white sometimes can help too.
All right. And next up, Stanley is on the line in Fayette. Hi, Stanley.
Hi, I had two questions. Compost piles, do they have to be in a container, or can you just encircle it with chicken wire and pile the stuff up as you go?
You can use chicken wire. That's fine.
All right.
I mean, is it fine being out in the open, or does it have to be in the box or in the barrel?
No, it doesn't have to be, no. As far as a compost pile, I would probably put it in part shade. The important thing is to build that in layers and add a little bit of soil with each layer of plant material, and then keep it moist, and turn it often. If you do those things, it breaks down fairly quickly. Try to put in a mix of materials, maybe some leaves, some grass clippings, just kind of a mix of materials, and keep that well turned and moistened.
And what was your other question, Stanley?
And the other question is, if I want to get plants out earlier, can I kind of cover them with milk jugs?
You can do that, and it may provide a few degrees of protection. But if we have, let's say, maybe a 26-degree temperature, 27-degree temperature, that may not be sufficient. But it may be okay if it's like 31 or 32.
And I see a lot of people using that technique, particularly, mm-hmm. I think, with tomato plants. Mm-hmm. Does that give them a little bit of a head start, just to heat things up?
Right. You can maybe plant a few days earlier than normal, and that may allow you to get some fruit earlier in the year. But it's not going to be a dramatic increase in earliness.
Okay.
Just a few days.
Sandra's on the line next in Knoxville. Hi, Sandra.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I had a question about goji berries and also a dwarf Carmen Jewel cherry tree that I saw advertised. I just especially was interested in the goji berry. Is that a shrub that would be a pest to if it got started? It looks like it has a lot of fruit on it in the picture.
The goji berry is sort of marginally hardy here in Iowa.
I see.
I know there's a Redfern farm down in southeast Iowa near Wapello that's done some work on that, but it's worth trying. I tried it a little bit myself, wasn't too successful, but I think with enough care and so forth that it can be grown, but it's like I say, it's rather tender.
The honey berry also, would that be tender?
No, that would actually be the opposite extreme.
Oh.
The honey berry.
Is it a good fruit, would you say, to grow?
Well, the honey berries have done a lot of work in around Saskatchewan, Canada, is where they've done a lot of the breeding and work with that. And so it's extremely hardy. To be honest with you, I grew some of those. You need to have a male and a female plant to get cross-pollination. And I planted some, but unfortunately, I lost the female. And I never have actually tried one myself, so I can't really say what it tastes like. It is related to the...
It sure sounds delicious.
Well, it is related to the common honeysuckle, and I've tried that, which isn't good. But this honeyberry, which is a type of honeysuckle, is supposed to be pretty good. And like I say, I can't give personal examples. I don't know. Richard, have you ever tried one?
Never have, no.
With a honeysuckle being an invasive species in Iowa, is that a risk with the honeyberry?
Well, that's a great question, too. They've looked at that, and there is that possible potential, but from what people have seen so far, they don't think it's going to be invasive.
Okay. Sandra, thanks a lot for your call. And next up is John in Swisher. Hi, John.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a question on white peach. My dad has been raising these white peaches for 50 years, and he got the seeds from an older gentleman that had been propagating them, you know, for many years before, too. And it seems like every single seed produces a tree that produces prolific fruit. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know if that's typical. He calls it an Iowa peach.
Yeah.
Like last year, my three-year-old tree, I canned 5 gallons of peaches off of it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
How big were the peaches?
Even last year in the drought, they were really big. They're about the size of about half the size of a baseball.
Okay, that's kind of large for what one referred to as the Iowa white peach. Normally, they're a little bit bigger than a golf ball, but the white peaches, for the most part, come fairly true to type if you plant them from seed. One of the ones that is referred to as white peach is also known as the Bailey rootstock, that it's used for a rootstock for a lot of the other peaches as well. But there's been a lot of situations where people have said that these white peaches seem to have a little extra hardiness than maybe some of our traditional peaches do.
All right. Maybe you want to share some of those seeds around, John. Thanks a lot for your call. And I think we can squeeze in one more question. This is from Beth in Ankeny. I'm looking for a shade tree for the front yard on the south exposure of the house. There's currently nothing in the yard. I'm looking for something that will not get gigantic like an oak, but not too small either. I'm also not a gardener who pampers her plants, so drought tolerance and inherent ruggedness is a must. What do you think?
Possibly a honey locust. There are a number of cultivars, and there are some that are shorter than others. But the honey locust is native to Iowa. It's very, very tough, very adaptable. Now, when you plant any tree, you're going to have to water that for at least a year or two on a regular basis if it doesn't rain. But once you get it established, it should be on its own.
All right. Richard Giron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We'll talk again next week. And Patrick O'Malley, thank you.
You're welcome.
Patrick O'Malley and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Monday on the show, we'll talk about the Catholic Church in Iowa. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.